and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at.
We don't want more money. We want to see people's behaviors change and for everybody to get home safe.
An effort to lower Chicago's default speed limit to 25 miles an hour.
Why should they be punished for just for their address?
Chicago's pocketed with dry precincts, but an effort brewed on the north side or brewing on the north side would lift the area's ban on selling alcohol. Counting the cost of sports gambling as it surges in popularity.
When this wet, warm air mass hits land and starts to cool again, whammo, lake effect snow.
And we didn't see a lot of lake effect snow last year, but this winter could be a whole other story. We'll explain why. And now to some of today's top stories. Opening statements are underway in the landmark corruption trial of former Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan. The statements began at the Dirksen Federal Building today following 8 days of jury selection. Madigan and his longtime confidant Mike McLean are facing charges of racketeering, bribery, and wire fraud. Federal prosecutors argue Madigan exploited his immense political power in Springfield to seek and accept bribes. Both Madigan and McLean have denied any wrongdoing. There's much more from today's proceedings on our website. Migrants who make their way to the city of Chicago will no longer be guaranteed a bed in city shelters, as Chicago says it's transitioning to a different phase of the crisis.
I'm moving into a different phase of this humanitarian effort. Currently, we are seeing fewer and fewer asylum seekers arrive in the city of Chicago. And the resettlement efforts, wraparound services, and support provided in the shelter system by Chicago and our partners at the county and state empower thousands of new arrivals to be on a path to self-sufficiency.
The new One System initiative, set to launch in January, is intended to streamline operations and reduce the cost of running migrant shelters under a unified shelter system. Starting in 2025, both migrants as well as Chicago's longtime unhoused residents will receive care through this system. Changes start tomorrow, with only migrants who've been in the country a month or less being eligible for a spot in one of the city's 13 migrant shelters. And if you already know who you're voting for, you can go ahead and get started in any ward you like. Beginning today through November 4th, that's, of course, the day before the election, Chicagoans can visit any early voting site in any ward to cast your ballot, no matter which ward you live in. Ward early voting locations are open weekdays and weekends. You can also still apply to vote by mail through October 31st, although the Chicago Board of Elections recommends taking care of that sooner than later. And if you're still not sure who you're voting for yet, be sure to check out our voter guide at WTTW.com/voter guide to find information on the candidates, as well as details on where you can vote and to see if you're registered. The longtime publisher of the Hyde Park Herald newspaper is being honored in the same category as rapper Missy Elliott, actress Eva Longoria, and filmmaker Steven Spielberg. It's all happening at the White House in a ceremony that just wrapped up in the last hour, where they're being honored with the National Medal of Arts, the highest award the federal government gives to artists and arts patrons. Today's ceremony honors both the 2022 and 2023 recipients in a ceremony with President Joe Biden. The now 95-year-old Sagan had published the Hyde Park Herald for 69 years until his retirement in 2022, when the paper was joined with the Southside Weekly. The longtime arts patron has also served on the boards of the Joffrey Ballet and Steppenwolf Theater. Up next, a new effort that aims to make city streets safer, right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
Chicago drivers might soon have to ease up on the gas. A city council committee earlier today approved an ordinance that would lower the default speed limit to 25 miles an hour from the current 30. Supporters say it would have major safety benefits, cutting down on deaths and significant injuries, but critics are raising questions about over-enforcement, ticket revenue, and why this move is important now. Our Nick Blumberg was at today's hearing and joins us now with more. Nick.
Well, Brandis, a pedestrian struck by a driver going 25 miles an hour is half as likely to die versus being struck at 30 miles an hour. Slower speeds also reduce the likelihood of serious injuries. And we should also note, Black and Latino Chicagoans, people over 70, all more likely to die in a fatal traffic crash. Those are just some of the reasons that supporters of this measure say it is time to slow down. Cities including Washington, D.C., Atlanta, Seattle, they've already made this move on some or all of their streets. Now, the measure is being sponsored by Alderman Daniel LaSpada, who says traffic calming efforts like lower speed limits have curbed fatal crashes in his ward for nearly 2 years.
It's a combination of infrastructure and education and policy. The first ward, predominantly on the streets that used to have the highest numbers of crashes, they either have dramatic infrastructure improvements or lower posted speed limits to 20 or 25 miles per hour, or oftentimes both.
LaSpada says the goal is not increased ticket revenue, it's making sure people get home safely. He added he had an hour-long meeting with the CPD's deputy chief of patrol, who assured him it won't change anything in the way officers currently enforce traffic laws. But Alderman Jason Ervin pushed back pretty sharply, questioning why this should be a priority for the council right now, which earned him a response from the committee's vice chair, Ruth Cruz.
When you're dealing with homelessness, violence, lack of economic opportunity, a plethora of issues. I'm sorry, but reducing the speed limit is not the number one issue that my community is looking at.
Well, I understand there's a lot of different urgent matters, and I agree. But we're talking about this committee, which is being the Committee of Pedestrian Traffic Safety. These are the issues that are important to this committee.
The measure passed the committee on an 8-5 vote, but LaSpada says he won't call it for a full city council vote at tomorrow's meeting, so alders have more time to understand the goals and impact of the plan. Brandis, he told us he plans to call it sometime before the end of the year.
And Nick, we know the committee also took up a couple of other measures today. Tell us about those.
That's right. They also okayed a pilot program that would allow residents to submit complaints to 311 along with photo evidence of drivers illegally blocking a bus or bike lane. Those complaints would trigger a city review, and if the city agrees, they would result in a warning or citation, depending on the circumstances. LaSpada says you can complain right now to 311, but it doesn't trigger any immediate action, and that enforcing lane violations is not the best use of CPD's time. They also approved a resolution calling for the creation of a group to examine the city's traffic ticketing structure. Right now, the burden of tickets falls disproportionately on people of color and people with lower incomes. Some of the ideas for reform include sending drivers educational information along with a warning on their first offense, charging fines based on income level, or using speed camera revenue to overhaul streets in ways that help slow down traffic.
All right, trying to slow them down. Nick Blumberg, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And you can read Nick's full story on our website. It's all at WTTW.com/news. Up next, a restaurant fights to lift a century-plus ban on selling booze. Have a lot of decisions to make in November. Who'll be the next president? Many seats in Congress, dozens of judicial races. And Illinois voters will also be asked some referendum questions, but those are just advisory. According to the Chicago Board of Elections, in the entire city, there is only one referendum question on the ballot that will have binding results. And only a small sliver of the population will be voting on it. Amanda Venicky has the story.
Sochi Milko Restaurant in Ravenswood has been serving elevated Mexican dishes since 2018, fulfilling a dream of owners Lucia Erajon and her husband. Fajitas, flan, cibes, carne asada. The drink menu, though, is limited.
We are BYOB, so you can bring your own bottle. You can choose spring wine, beer, or we have a freshly squeezed margarita mix that we make in-house, and you can bring your own tequila.
That was fine for a while, but with food prices, making the profits gotten harder. So they decided to apply for a liquor license.
You make like 40% profit off alcohol, and on food you're making like 8%.
She says they jumped through hoops to meet Chicago's criteria.
Background check, you have to get insurance and start paying for insurance as if you had a liquor license.
They passed the city inspection, but then an email from their lawyer.
That's when they learned they can't get a liquor license. They're in the 9th precinct of the 47th Ward, and it is dry and has been since 1907. Over here, just across the street, the 10th precinct, it's wet. In fact, I've had a couple tasty cocktails at that very restaurant across the street.
It's not even the whole precinct, rather a portion of it, dating back to more than a century ago. According to a paper written by a resident in 2019, Ravenswood residents petitioned to make the area a prohibition district more than 100 years ago amid a temperance movement in a bid to keep an amusement park from coming to the area, arguing that neighborhoods that have already been invaded by these parks have become the resorts of thieves and rowdies. We do not care to have them in Ravenswood. This pocket of Chicago isn't alone. According to the city's elections board, Chicago has 1,291 precincts. Within them, 350 areas in Chicago are dry.
It's the sale of alcohol at retail, not consuming alcohol in private at your home, but the ability to sell alcohol to the general public.
Former city liquor commissioner Gregory Stedman says he's seen modern movements to make a precinct dry.
The only pattern that I ever recognize is areas of the city that seem to have troublesome liquor establishments that were causing negative quality of life issues for communities.
Alternatively, dry areas can try to get a booze ban lifted. That's hard work.
Those voters can do a petition now, get 25%. The registered voters to sign it, submit it to the city clerk's office under the timelines given, have it reviewed, and if it's a sufficient petition, it would go on the ballot for the general election to vote it wet.
That's the route Xochimilco's owners are taking.
We had to go door to door collecting signatures from all registered voters.
How many doors did you knock on?
Every door in the neighborhood.
How many is it?
I'm not sure how many doors, but there are 497 registered voters, and we needed 150 to make it to the ballot.
They succeeded, which is why voters in the area will see this question on their ballot. A couple residents we talked to had no clue the area is dry, but had some thoughts.
I think businesses need all the help they can get because in my neighborhood especially, businesses have been closing left and right.
Prohibition was ended in, 1933?
Yeah.
So, it should end. I mean, why is it still happening 100 years later?
Which is why she says she'll vote no. Key in on the question. It asks, shall the prohibition of the sale at retail of alcoholic liquor be continued? As in, voters who want to reverse the ban should vote no. Voting yes would keep the ban in place. Not exactly cut and, dry. For Chicago Tonight, I'm Amanda Vinicky.
Xochimilco's co-owner, Lucia Herrajón, tells us no matter the outcome, she says she's learned a lesson. Like a lot of people, she used to gloss over questions on ballots, and she'd ignore it when a stranger came to knock on her door. Not anymore. She says from here on out, she's paying attention and answering the door when someone knocks. Check out our WTTW News Voter Guide for everything you need to know before voting in the general election. That's WTTW.com/voterguide. Sports betting is raking in record revenues as the industry skyrockets in popularity. This includes in Illinois, which represents the third largest sports gambling market in the country. But according to recent studies, sports gambling can be much more costly to draining household finances than other forms of gambling. Joining us now are Noah Henderson, a clinical instructor in sports management at Loyola University Chicago and writer for Sports Illustrated. And joining us via Zoom, Jason Cotter, an assistant professor of finance at Brigham Young University and co-writer of a study on sports gambling's impact on vulnerable households. Gentlemen, thank you both for joining us. Noah Henderson, let's start with you, please. According to the American Gambling Association, last year, sports gamblers legally bet nearly $120 billion nationwide, bringing in $11 billion in revenue. Why is sports gambling so popular?
Well, I think first we have to look at that in the majority of these legalized jurisdictions, we have mobile sports wagering, where sports gambling is as easy to do as ever in the comfort of your own home. If you have access to a computer or a cell phone, you can fire it up, turn on your TV, watch a game, and start gambling off your phone. It's exploding in other reasons because, well, in the state of Illinois, we're in Big Ten country. People love sports, professional sports, college sports. All are made available on these apps and kind of a limitless platform to play.
It's become obviously much more accessible. Jason Cotter, remind us about the 2018 Supreme Court ruling that enabled states to make sports gambling legal.
Yeah, so prior to 2018, sports betting on sports games was only allowed in Nevada. And in 2018, the Supreme Court ruled against that law. It was a lawsuit filed by New Jersey, which allowed sports betting to become legal in any state that chooses to legalize it. So New Jersey started that wave in 2018. Over the course of the last several years, several states have followed. We now have close to 30 states that have legalized sports betting and more states considering it as we speak.
As you mentioned, there are 38 legal sports gambling states, NOAA plus Washington, D.C. and Puerto Rico. What are some of the benefits of legalization? Tax revenue, I would imagine, is one.
Sure. I think, firstly, for states, as far as states are concerned, tax revenue is huge. In the state of Illinois last year, we had $150 million in tax revenue from all sports gambling. Governor Pritzker has recently signed into law new tax codes for sports gambling. It's going to be the first ever progressive tax code in the United States where, depending on total revenues from sports gambling retailers, they could have to pay anywhere from 20 to 40% tax rate for their revenues, which will more than double the projected tax income in the future for the state.
Is Illinois bringing in the kind of tax revenue that was predicted, that's expected? Is it beneficial?
Well, the revenue that Illinois and, frankly, all states around the country have brought in has been much higher. Sports gambling, the amount wagered and subsequently the revenue sports gambling retailers have had is way bigger than forecasted. So Illinois is seeing tremendous amounts of tax revenue creation.
Jason, what separates sports gambling from other types of legalized gambling? How is it so different from going to the casino?
Well, I think, as I was already mentioned, one of the things here is the ease of access, because you can do this on your phone from anywhere. It's just really easy to bet anytime you'd like to. But the other thing that I think plays a role here is that people are emotionally connected to sports. They often consider themselves experts in their team or their player, in ways that you don't always feel like an expert when you walk into the casino. And that makes it easier for people to feel like they have an advantage when they place these bets.
Noah, some people see, sports gambling as a skill. Why do people think that they might have more of an advantage to, say, pulling a slot machine?
Well, I think we just heard it. People who are emotionally connected to their sports teams, people who watch sports, will spend all day Saturday and Sunday watching, games of chance probability, whether that's a slot machine, blackjack. There's a understanding that these are random probabilities. Sports fans who have either played the game or watched it since they were a child think through that exposure. They know more than those making the lines in Vegas or elsewhere and think that they have a house edge. In reality, sports gambling, like anything else, favors the house.
It always does. Jason, how has increased gambling, how's it impacted the gambler and their families?
Well, an important thing that we find in our recent research is that the advent of sports gambling has really been negative for family finances. So the biggest thing that we've seen in our study is that as households begin betting on sports, they actually stop investing in stocks. And so they sort of transfer some of their long-term savings into sports betting, which, is just really a bad decision in terms of the long-term financial health of their balance sheet. And moreover, what we see this happen most with the households that are least able to be prepared to deal with this. So households that are already pretty tight on their finances are the ones that we see cutting their savings the most. They increase their debt also that they can participate in this betting market.
Noah, what are some of the signs that someone might be developing a sports gambling addiction?
Well, sports gambling addictions look like addictions in a variety of other substances or industries. Cash advances are one of the most dangerous things that you can see. A lot of sports retailers now allow people to use credit cards to deposit money on these apps, right? Anytime someone's using a cash advance, that's dangerous. Chasing losses, depositing multiple times in a day, staying up late to watch, you know, later games to continue to gamble, a lack of desire or care for things that aren't sports or sports gambling. It mirrors a lot of other addiction.
Jason, how would you say sports gambling has changed the way people consume sports?
Well, I think, you know, any casual sports fan who turns on a game, it's in your face all of the time. So for many people, that's great. It makes it more enjoyable for them to consume sports when they have a little bit of money on the line. You know, they're more invested in it and they get a lot of enjoyment out of that, which is great. You know, for other people, it's kind of a pain to have it always in your face, and the advertising and the focus on odds and so on maybe makes it a little bit less enjoyable. But I think the important thing here is, you know, of course, if you can responsibly enjoy sports betting, that's great. But you ought to be cautious because there are real potential downsides if this habit gets out of control.
Okay. Something to keep an eye out for everybody, obviously, as we're only midway through the football season and then basketball starting soon. So Noah Henderson and Jason Cotter, thanks to you both for joining us. I appreciate it. Up next, the science behind a weather phenomenon Chicagoans know all too well. But first, a look at this week's forecast. After today's warm temperatures, winter may be the last thing on your mind. And even though last year in Chicago was one of the least snowy years on record, that could all change this winter. According to the Climate Prediction Center, 2023's strong El Nino that brought warmer temperatures and lower precipitation in Chicago is expected to give way to a weak La Nina, which will largely deliver the reverse. That includes the possibility of lots of lake effect snow. You may have heard of the weather phenomenon, but our Patty Wetley breaks down what it means in this edition of WTTW News Explains.
Between the wind and the cold and the sun disappearing for what seems like months at a time, winter in Chicago is not for the faint of heart. But it could be worse. We could live in one of these cities, the snowiest in the U.S. Notice a pattern here? They're all on the wrong side of a great lake. And by wrong side, we mean the side most likely to get socked with lake effect snow. Oh yeah, the lake effect snow machine is real. It's unpredictable and capable of dumping tons of snow in a short amount of time. And just because we're on the right side of the lake doesn't mean we're safe. When the wind turns on Chicago, watch out. So what causes lake effect snow? Two things: cold air and comparatively warmer water. Here's how it works. During a typical Midwestern winter, cold winds swoop in from the north, which, not to point fingers, usually means Canada. The Great Lakes hold onto their heat longer than the surrounding land, so when this cold air passes over the warmer water, it soaks up moisture like a sponge. Depending which way the wind is blowing, it might cross a lot of water. And the more water it travels over, the more moisture it picks up. When this wet, warm air mass hits land and starts to cool again, whammo, lake effect snow. The weirdest thing about lake effect snow is how it can fall fast and furious in one place while the sun is shining just a mile or two away. Storm? What storm? That's because unlike large weather systems, lake effect events tend to be hyper-local. So what keeps Chicago from being Buffalo? Well, here, wind patterns typically flow west to east, pushing that wet, warm air toward Indiana and Michigan. Sorry, not sorry. But when the winds switch, that's when the city gets a taste of the snowpocalypse. Chicago winter. It could be worse, and sometimes it is. Thanks, Lake Effect Snow.
Oh, the things we have to look forward to, but not this week. You can visit our website for more in our Emmy Award-winning series, WTTW News Explains, including how Illinois highway exits are numbered and why we have so many units of local government. That's at WTTW.com/explains. And that's our show for this Monday night. Check out our free email newsletter, The Daily Chicagoan, for more on what you need to know about the complicated issues facing the city. But we don't stop there. We also introduce you to new ways to explore your neighborhood and those around you with concert recommendations, weekend activities, and more. Head to WTTW.com/newsletter to sign up. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. With Chicago's public transportation system facing a looming fiscal cliff, we sit down with the leaders from CTA, Metra, PACE, and RTA to talk about why they say transit should be a priority and why they've resisted calls for a merger. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a personal injury law firm committed to giving back to the community through law and philanthropy.